This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Wawinjeka. Joy 94.9 would like to acknowledge and pay respect to the sovereign peoples of the past, present and future generations of the Kulin Nations on whose unceded land we work, live and broadcast from. We would also like to acknowledge all our brother boys and sister girls of the LGBTI communities. A silent storm begins to brew in an ancient land of darkness. With tumultuous force from the crust of the earth, two worlds come together as one, from the past and the present, celebrating culture and spirit, paving the pathway to our future. It's time for dreaming. Urban dreaming. Finding your voice. Finding your spirit. Joy 94.9.
Hello, everybody. Yes, you are on Urban Dreaming. My name's Gracie, currently in the studio without my co-host, Rami, but he is on his way and he will be here in a short while. We've got some guests in tonight from Ilbijerri Deadly Fringe. There's some artists performing there. Declan Ferbergelic and Sandy Greenwood are joining us in the studio. We've also got some new music coming up. Kaid is releasing her debut EP this Friday, the 31st of August, and we've got her brand new track to play for you. It's just ahead of a national tour. She's touring around the country, so make sure you do check out those dates and go down and see her. She has just featured on a brand new song from Cooking on Three Burners as well. It's called Warning. Definitely make sure you are giving those ones a listen. And go head on to her social medias and make sure you are liking and following, because these artists that are, you know, coming up in the world, they need all the support they can get. And Kaid is one that you definitely want to watch out for. Jill Scott and Erica Badu did say that she is their love child. They came to Australia, made a love child, and that is Kaid. So she's definitely one to watch, because soon she'll be off, you know, gallivanting around the world and we won't get the chance to see her as often. But as I said, we're going to kick it off with Kaid. It's OG Love Kush Part 2.
With something that a spotty kiss, I'm more than just that. I rock more than one hat. Braids, fedoras, snapbacks, and top hats. All right, I know a little something.
Audacity to leave your menthol cigarettes on the kitchen floor. You know how much I hate your smoking and your asthma always acting up on a fool. You're never really on my mind. I just think of you from time to time. Can finally say I'm sleeping well at night. Don't need weed singing me a lullaby. I feel like I'm your mama, cause it's so damn hard just to please you. But now it's not my problem. No more OT, love kush for you, boo. I feel like I'm your mama, cause it's so damn hard just to please you. But now that's not my problem. I got no more OT, love kush for you, boo. I wanna see you do nothing but the best. But in order to do that, I think it would be best. Never leave you on scene, block you off everything. Stop imagining that ring. I stop this as if drinking, hoping that I see you on the weekend. Going on my girl's phone to check your time. Stalking all them bitches that like your profile. That's your profile. Not anymore. I feel like I'm your mama, cause it's so damn hard just to please you. But now that's not my problem.
To please you, so high. Boy,
That was brand new from Kate. It's called OG Love Kush Part 2. And if you have missed any of our previous shows, make sure you are checking out and downloading our podcast and showing us some love. All you need to do is head over to joy.org.au/urban dreaming. You can get all your Joy podcasts there as well, or on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. So it's Xavier Rudd now. He was out with a new album in May of this year, and he is touring around the country. And this is his hit of the same title of the album. It's called Storm Boy. It's on Joy.
When will you learn that the more you take means the less that you have at the end of the day? Stillness of the mind is so hard to embrace. Freedom of the heart is what we crave, and we sit by the river with a cup of tea. Watch the movement of the tide in the gentle breeze. Pelican drifting slowly, looking for a feed, like Mr. Percival to Storm Boy, you to me. Kookaburra calls just like he knows, and I'll call right back. Yes, I'm home, he's been with me. He's watched me grow through those rainy days and those rocky roads. And now everybody smiles in the setting sun and sighs with contentment when the day is done. Hand in hand with the one you love, feeling blessed by the magic of the moon above. And we sing, sha-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world. It's time for fire, smoke and leaves, the only mosquito repellent we need. Pay respect to the north, the south, the west, and the east. Pay respect to the spirit of this old country. Freedom in the hearts of the young and brave, who know little of the journey of the diggers who gave their lives to the service and the government game, so that we could dance together on this beautiful day. And now everybody smiles in the setting sun and sighs with contentment when the day is done. Hand in hand with the one you love, feeling blessed by the magic of the moon above. And we sing, sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world. Everybody smiles in the setting sun and sighs with contentment when the day is done. Hand in hand with the one you love, feeling blessed by the magic of the moon above. And we sing, sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world. Sha-la-la-la-la-la-la-la, we're just living in this beautiful world.
This is Consciously Kaya, and you're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy.
Yes, you are on Joy 94.9. I'm going to be joined very, very shortly by Sarami and the guests from Ilbajeri Deadly Fringe. They are on their way, but first, it's Emily Waramara and Black Boy here on Joy on Urban Dreaming.
Thank you. take to learn about life and how his people lost their way. He was very stubborn, he was just a child, and now his life is mystified.
I'm Jambo Mienzimichi. What's good? My name is Wani, and you're listening to Urban Dreaming on Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Wani. Yes, this is Sarami on the mic.
And Gal back in the studio.
We literally just came in from a workshop facilitation and, speaking about country and getting in touch with our culture, which is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, sort of retracing our self and diving deeper into our memories and, I guess, yeah, just touching base literally with the ground and yeah, others as well.
So thank you to Gracie for taking charge for the very first part of the show, and it's just an honor to be a part of this show in general. The idea of us standing on Kulin Nation, this is a country where we're visitors to, you know, specifically I'm from Nyingana country, which is in the Kimberleys, and I can never pronounce this enough, the idea of us working on Kulin Nations and knowing that we are visitors, but also, you know, feeling actually at home which is a beautiful thing. So I'm going to introduce the next segment. We're going to talk about the Deadly Fringe. So Deadly Fringe is happening. It's coming up, guys. So it's something you want to definitely check out. There's so many performances happening around the whole of Melbourne. There's only three of us who are representing the Indigenous shows specifically for the Melbourne Fringe, which is called the Deadly Fringe. So for those who don't know, the Deadly Fringe unearths and nurtures brand new works by First Nation artists. And now it's the second year. And after the roaring success of the first Deadly Fringe, the artist Joel Bray, who won the best performance for his work as Billadurung. Yes, not every Aboriginal person can say every Aboriginal word in
completely different languages.
Exactly, so just keep that in mind. Deadly Fringe's 2018 features new work from the First Nations artists supported by a first of the two nations producers. So that's actually one of them in the room studio with us right now is Gail Palmer.
Yes, I'm back on board after sort of managing, navigating the pilot year last year, which was the first time Deadly Fringe ever sort of it came about, really. And so I'm back after Layla and Kalani sort of took over the show for a bit and I guess did really amazing things and have been touching base with everyone. But yeah, I'm here to support the artists again and I really love Deadly Fringe and I would keep coming back for a long time because it's definitely a new, I don't know, it's quite new, it's quite revolutionary for a mainstream festival to incorporate such a unique First Nations section where there's a really flexible space to shine and a really flexible place to expand and try new things but also just break away from common artistic stereotypes and presumptions, I guess, about Aboriginal work. So I love it because it really loosens it up and you can see some really, really interesting stuff that comes out of it.
And I love this, the idea of knowing that there is a, not only as artists but also as people behind the scenes, particularly producers, directors, writers, etc. They're all essential to the one, topic is their performance, yeah, in the end. And they all contribute. So as a producer, and specifically you meeting the artist for the first time as well.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I feel like I sort of already know people a little bit, but at the same time I'm like, okay, tell me about your performance. What do I need to do?
Which is what we want to do right now. So I want to introduce these two amazing artists. So the first fellow I'm going to introduce, his name is Declan Ferber-Gillick. Now, Declan is a multidisciplinary artist and a musician working in theatre, poetry and hip-hop. He was born in, can you say this for us, brother?
Mbantwa.
Madwa, there you go, in Arunta, there you go. Our country and lives in Preston on Wurundjeri land, or country. His creative practice incorporates cultural and community organising, education and facilitation. We'll go on with the bio, but I actually feel like we want to just get to know you as a person, Declan, and let us know about your work and what are you actually showing Melbourne?
Good to be here. Thanks for having me on, Joy. First time in the studio, it's very, very lovely. I do lots of different work, as the bio sort of hinted at. I do sort of my own music and production work. I do facilitation, sort of outreach hip-hop programs around different communities in Australia, working for Desert P Media. Currently a resident writer at Melbourne Theatre Company. I sort of got into writing theatre and playwriting the last couple of years. So, and theatre influenced my writing in a big way. So I write sort of performance prose. I sort of went from a slam poetry background into writing performance prose and sort of theatrical storytelling. And this is my first one-man theatre show. So it's decidedly a shift from sort of memoir-style storytelling and poetry to working with the frame and the lens of theatre and writing. I guess what I'd call is it's dramatic storytelling. Yeah, and so that's Know My Show. Know My Show is Big House Dreaming, and it'll be running from 25th to the 29th of September with a double show on the Friday night, and that's at Brothers Mechanics Institute.
Wow, so and a very political show at that, and I think the idea of, telling these particular stories that usually aren't spoken about often and openly, it's a big step for you, bro. So, let us know how you're feeling right now and I guess what do you want to earn from this experience as well?
Sure. Yeah, it is. It's difficult material. I guess what I've done is try to look at the story of young men and young, in particular young Aboriginal men, and their relationship to the youth justice system. I come from a town which has got a lot of heat and a lot of really bad, good, it's good that there has been bad press about youth incarceration. It's been a lot of people making a lot of noise about the high levels of young Aboriginal men and women in prison, and sort of following the Four Corners expose a couple of years ago, I sat with that and have been sitting and watching the response to that, and I felt a responsibility to respond artistically to that. So what I've written is this show that follows a young man through a court process, and it looks at his connection to his community and family, and his endeavours as an aspiring hip-hop artist, and the mentors that he does and doesn't have in his life, and sort of ultimately the struggle of trying to deal with the justice system as a very young person. So it's working with really quite harrowing content. For me, there's no sort of straightforward and easy answers, and so I sort of really try and tackle that and go into the difficult tensions and explore them in with a theatrical lens. So yeah, it's a hugely ambitious show in terms of the amount of content that I have to produce and memorize and perform. So it's my biggest show. If I think about it too hard, I get really terrified, so I'm just sort of doing one thing at a time. I've got a really fantastic creative team, and I'm working with a really fantastic director called Mark Wilson. So look, I feel like I'm in safe hands, but yeah, existential crisis mode at the moment. But I do it pretty well, yeah.
You seem to be, keep remaining calm every time I see your face anyway. So, but internally, you must be. Like, I know the feeling myself, but the idea of performing in front of people and sharing a story that you connect to, but also a part of yourself is obviously going to be showing this story. So how much do you feel you're investing in the story as a part of your perspective, but then also the others?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a difficult one, and I think that there's a lot of assumption that when Aboriginal people and when people who are part of minority cultures make work and particularly make theatre, there's this kind of assumption that it's autobiographical or that it's like a deeply personal work. And it is deeply personal work, this show for me, and I do draw upon my life experiences. But it's not about Declan the person, you know. It's not about who I've been and what I've done. But at the same time, I'm drawing upon my soul and my psyche and I can't make this work without it being a deeply personal work. So for me, the craft is in turning something that's experiential and deeply personal into something that is universally accessible, hopefully, and something that is meaningful across race and class and gender lines and across age lines. So there's a lot of me in the show in that I'm on the stage performing it. So I try not to overdo the me being in it because I'm already on the stage. So that's, I don't know if that answers your question, but it's not autobiographical work, but it's personally influenced work. Yeah,
I think that's pretty well said, actually.
Yeah, I think it really encompasses that grey area you can get as well when you actually have to ask yourself, how much am I investing in this and how much am I giving myself away to something that is going to reach an audience that's unknown? Like, you don't know who's necessarily going to rock up and what the vibe's going to be like there, and how much are you giving yourself away to a whole room full of strangers? And yeah, I think it's such a brave and crazy thing to do, especially when it is coming from that place of personal experience.
Mm. And I think it was really important for me to get a director that I trusted, because having an outside eye on a solo show, I think, was really helps to temper that personal element and to help someone else to nut it out with me, so I'm not going, oh my god, it's all me, this is just my life story, because it's not. But making a solo show, it can very much feel like you're just in the middle of this psychic maelstrom and you're just having to kind of produce something that, is this even relevant, is this just some kind of narcissistic arc that's just about me? But having that director and a creative team to go, no, we're going to craft this into something, we're going to use that text, and it's going to be a show, it's not going to be an autobiography.
Solid.
I guess that's the expectations too of being a one-man play, is like, oh, we get to know this person more, or we get to know, or delve into, I guess, deeper into their subconscious, and finding ways that we can, I don't know, what can we take from this? And that is my question too. What can we take from your performance, do you think? What are people going to leave with, or what mark will you leave for people to, I guess, to walk away and understand?
Yeah, look, I don't think that people will walk away having a direct experience of a deeper and a more direct experience of me, of Declan the person. I think that what people will probably hopefully walk away with is hopefully a lot of fairly deep and difficult questions about what justice means, what law means, and what L-O-R-E law means, and how those things intersect, what it means to be a young man and a young Aboriginal man in Australia. And I think hopefully what I'm really pushing for with this work is what it means to live in a society where masculinity is so fraught. Because that's really at the heart of this work, is looking at black and white masculinity and looking at the problems within that and the way that masculinity I don't know. I really want to get to the heart of some of the problems with Australian masculinity, black and white, and the way that those things play out in a personal way, but the way they play out in a systemic and institutional way, and the way that those things are linked to colonialism and other kinds of imperialist power.
I just have one little question. In terms of, I know it's your first time doing a one-man show, but are you experimenting in any of your theatrical, I guess, strategies and movements, or is this something out of your comfort zone? Is this something that you're really just playing it by ear and just trying new things?
It's a big push for me as an artist. I learn the most and get the most out of the text from being on the floor, working the material with my director. So that hasn't started yet. We haven't gone into rehearsals yet. My director is in Amsterdam. We Skype every couple of days, and I sort of go, it doesn't make any sense. And he goes, relax, it looks great.
It's that it
fun.
Is.
And he's like in the European summer. He's like,
with
yeah,
a beer.
Yeah. So I think I'll be pushing myself in really new directions, yeah. And once we get on the floor, but I really trust my director to craft the show and to bring my strengths, because my strengths are in my voice, my delivery. I don't have formal training as an actor, so we'll be working on that, but we're not going to like be a performer that I'm not.
The audiences that need to see these pieces, do you think that, you know, having Deadly Fringe is so important in as part of Melbourne Fringe to get these audiences and to, especially for white people, to listen to these stories and find out about these stories?
I think so, yeah. And I never quite know who my audience is, but I'd say that a lot of the issues that I'm looking at in this show are really relevant to young professionals. I really want to get a lot of young students, so people who are going to go on to be young professionals and very much including non-Aboriginal people. And that, to me, they're the people that I'm thinking about and speaking to when I write this work. But I'm also, it's really important for me for my work to be accessible to lots of people. I think the work's highly accessible to the Aboriginal community. I think it's really accessible to the queer community. My director Mark and I are both queer, and we bring that lens, and I think it's a really interesting to have a queer Indigenous lens looking at maleness. So yeah, I think I like to make theatre and work that is as universal as possible, and certainly there's some issues that I think really are directed at people working in the professions that I'm going to be kind of bringing that lens to. I think the work could be hugely emotive and interesting for anyone, and particularly young Aboriginal people and anyone who's had to do with the youth justice system and those inside, and those, and in particular families who've had young people go through the youth justice system. Hopefully it's a really healing work for them and a really bit of a vindicating work for them. I want to hit multiple layers of culture and society. That's always the way with my work.
I'm seriously looking forward to seeing your show, Declan.
Yeah, me too.
And I encourage others to, if you get a chance to go to the Deadly, or just in general, the Fringe Festival, you must check out these particular shows for the Deadly Fringe and the artists. And speaking of other artists, we have a full studio this evening. Our next artist is actually, her name is Sandy Greenwood, and she's a First Nations, a Nations actress from, you have to say these ones for me, and let me guess it first. Is it Dungari?
Dungari, yes.
And Goombanga.
Goombanga.
And the Bundjalung tribes of Australia.
You got it there, brother.
Yes, thank you. Sandy graduated from the Queensland University of Technology in Creative Industries. She has performed with Australia's leading companies, theatre companies, including Sydney Theatre Company and the Obidjeri Theatre, Indigenous Theatre Company. And she's worked internationally at the Seattle Theatre Company and won roles in film and television, including the US blockbuster Killer Elite, alongside, guess who? Robert De Niro. Wow, this girl is quite versatile, and you've obviously travelled a lot. And I've heard a little bit about your work, but let people know generally what your work is about.
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's really deadly to see familiar faces and meet new mob, and it's my first time here at Joy, and I've been away for a while, so yeah, it's good to be back. So I've been in Los Angeles for the last 4 years, and I'm bringing my show back to Deadly Fringe. It's called Matriarch. It's about four generations of women in my family, my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother and myself. It is a deeply personal story. It is autobiographical. It's honouring the matriarchs in our communities, and it deals with intergenerational trauma of the stolen generation, cultural identity, and just celebrating the strength and resilience of our mothers, of our matriarchs, of the backbone of our communities. Yeah, it's kind of frightening to put yourself out there and, you know, and to kind of bare your soul, but it's also deeply healing. I'm hoping to heal some of the generational wounds, and I feel like my nan and my gran are with me. They're passed over now, but I feel like they're with me, and that these stories need to come out so we can just, you know, kind of release some of this trauma and, you know, and celebrate, you know, our beautiful culture.
Is that partly why you think you're doing this particular performance? Because your work seems to be, like, when you think about the diversity that you've worked with, mm-hmm. this is actually a personal story. Mm-hmm. What do you feel is going to come out of this for you and, I guess, for your families?
Healing. Yeah, just kind of healing that the DNA of the trauma, like it's kind of passed down, and it's like I see it in my family, I see it in my aunties and my uncles, I see it in my brothers and my sisters. It's just trauma that permeates your being, and it just doesn't allow you to kind of just be at your full potential. And, you know, I've been dealing with that my whole career of, you know, and it's manifested in ways like self-sabotage and, you know, just finding ways to numb the pain. And, you know, theatre is such an amazing way. It's therapeutic, it's cathartic, it's, you know, it allows you just to kind of put yourself out there and release things out to the ether. And yeah, so and it like I do feel like, why am I doing this and why would anyone want to hear my story? But you know, I just want to, you know, my grandmother, my great grandmother, you know, they're incredibly strong women. You know, they raised 14 kids in the bush, they lived, you know, they're able to kind of straddle black and white worlds. My mum was taken, put in an orphanage, and, you know, I grew up with these strong women that kind of overcame such intense adversity and still came out with, like, such grace, such strength, and so, you know, at peace, really. And I kind of was born with this trauma. I just want to let it go and also want to, you know, just maybe share, you know, being fair-skinned Aboriginal. Like, you know, I don't really... no one really can tell I'm Aboriginal, but I grew up black. So I think that's an interesting thing in this time and place. I think people are ready for, you know, the diversity of Indigenous Australia, for all of us to tell our stories, and you know, it brings us together as Australians, I think. And it is the era of storytelling, apparently. So I think everyone has a story, and I think it's my time to tell the story. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm quite interested, like the combination of like acknowledging the pain but also celebrating the resistance. And it reminds me of like a quote I saw the other day by a First Nations Native American mob there, and it was, although trauma is in our DNA, so is resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that really sat with me, because resistance and rebellion and that fight is also embedded in our DNA just as much as trauma is. Like, it was sort of a reminder that
we
have control too.
I saw that as well, and that resonated with me. It's like, let's get to the resistance. Let's get to the strength. Let's kind of move past this. This was pushed on us.
Yeah, and do you think your performance really pushes that a little bit?
Well, the process has been extremely challenging. Everything's coming up, so I feel like it's coming up and out. So yeah, I feel that's happening, and I feel like I'm getting stronger as a person, you know.
Do you find that your family are quite supportive of, you know, obviously these stories are really important to tell, but some people find reliving those things quite traumatic, but are you getting that support from, obviously you have a very large family.
Yeah.
How many kids did your grandmother
14.
have?
14.
Yeah, wow.
Can you imagine giving birth 14 times?
I can't imagine doing it once.
Biggest mob. I'm from Barraville Mission. I've got over 300 family members. It's mainly my mother's story. I play my mum as a little girl, and I'm just so thankful that she's able to, like, to go back and tell me in detail really painful things in order for me to tell this story. I'm so grateful for her. And my whole creative team is all my family members. My brother's an amazing hip-hop artist. He's going to be doing live dig and movement, and my sister's doing art design. My mum's cultural consultant. So, yeah, it's a family.
It's a family feud.
Yeah.
That's so nice, though. And you said that you're sort of looking at four different generations of women. Are you playing the four generations of women?
Yeah, I'm playing all four women.
Yeah, not to give anything away too much, but you will be...
Yeah, I'm a character actress, so I'll be playing all four women, and then all, you know, nuns in the orphanage, and, you know, all just the different characters that came in and out of the lives.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's... I am excited as well as petrified, but I think that's natural as an artist when you put yourself out there.
Yeah, it so is. And what are the dates of your performance?
So I'll be performing at the Warehouse at the Fringe Hub from the 22nd to the 29th of September. So 7 shows only at 6:30 at night.
Deadly. That's a good time.
Yeah,
too.
It is good. People just come after work and no excuse now, you get to come. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's beautiful that you're honouring the stories of your family heritage and the idea of knowing that there's, you know, that next generation and empowering the next mob after you, you know. So I think that intergenerational not only is a trauma, but it's also a chance to relive and experience the history and experience the power of matriarch.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's not – yeah, that's exactly right. It's like, you know, now my little nieces and nephews can, you know, hopefully see it and they'll be like, oh, that's our nan, that's our great-grand, that's how they lived, that's what they did, that's how they talk, you know.
And just
like,
passing on the knowledge,
capsule,
you know.
Of, you know,
memories and experiences.
Yeah, and that's our culture, is story. Storytelling.
Exactly.
So this is modern day storytelling.
Namani, you mob, this is Jacob Boehm. You're listening to Urban Dreaming, Joy 94.9. Nakanya.
Yes, we're here sitting down talking about the Deadly Fringe for the Melbourne Festival. So together with our partners at Ilbidgery Theatre Company, we've been working with writer, performing artist, storytellers, Declan Ferber Gellick and Sandy Greenwood. Basically, yeah, the shows are Big House Dreaming and Matriarch. I'm really interested in just going back a little bit. We had this conversation quite often on Urban Dreaming, the idea of us mob telling stories as artists, but specifically touching on the intergenerational trauma and stuff that's somehow been embedded for us to find ways to heal. I guess for a lot of people who don't understand the concept of colonization and what happened to our mob from the very beginnings of time, finding that we were forcefully removed and connected, disconnected from culture and from country, obviously it plays a big part for each generation, because once one is impacted, another continues. So I guess in reference to both of you as a question, why do you find it's the time is now to tell these stories, and what is it in you that's been calling you or telling you something about why you need to do this and why you want to pass on knowledge?
Yeah, I just think it's just a deep kind of intuition that it's this time to do it, really. Like, I just kind of follow my intuition, and I just feel like in order to go into the next phase of my life and then, you know, pretend, you know, be a mum, I don't want to pass on this trauma. I just want to be able to release it. And, yeah, I just go with instinct, really. It's just the time. Like, you know, I've been thinking about it for a few years now, and it just hasn't been the right time. I've had other artistic projects and other things that have been happening, and then I was just like, I think I need to get this out now, I need to do it. And then I came back to Melbourne, and Ilbidgery and Melbourne Fringe were like, we'll give you the opportunity to tell it. So I just feel like everything's falling into place. There's so much synchronicity and just kind of going with it.
Through my 20s, I had lots of periods of anger and confusion and kind of coming to terms with the way the world is, and trying and thinking a lot about what I could do and what I couldn't do for Aboriginal and other marginalised people and for the environment. And I was radicalised politically at about age 21, and I just went through a period of like a lot of anger. I was part of political groups and did some sort of organising and actions and organised student movement a little bit and stuff like that. And I used to speak at rallies, and I guess a lot of that kind of really, that really fiery heat of the immediacy of that kind of political focus kind of has sort of died down a little bit for me. But like very, very much, it's still this really deep fire in the belly that feels so much fury. And every time I make a piece of work, I just think, fuck them. Like, I just want to nail them. The powers and the systems that continue to exploit and incarcerate and marginalise and cause suffering the world over. So that's why I make art, because I've always wanted to do that, and I became very disillusioned with, you know, I found a political organisation that I wanted to work in long term. I felt very isolated and marginalised as an individual, looking at these systems and getting more and more and more understanding intellectually of what was wrong and why things were the way they were, but feeling less and less empowered. And so the stage and the microphone and the page and the pen is a place where I can use my craft to just speak back and offer some kind of outlet for that fire that's very much still in my belly as a resistor and as an activist. Yeah.
Yes, you're an Urban Dream. We're discussing The Deadly Fringe and we'll be right back after the short break.
Hey, you mob, it's Layla Thacker and you're listening to Urban Dreaming, Joy 94.9. Esso!
Esso! Oh, Layla, where are you tonight, Layla? We love you. We miss you. So, guys, yeah, we're speaking about The Deadly Fringe and the artists and producers, and particularly in the studio right now, we have one of the producers, Gail Palmer, who's actually also co-host for Urban Dreaming. And, of course, we've got Sandy Greenwood and Declan Ferber-Gellick. You guys, it's such an honour to have you on board and to know that your story is... It's empowering to us mob and also empowering to others who are, I guess, learning about culture, mm-hmm. learning about Aboriginal culture and history. And it's, you know, the importance of telling a story. It's essential, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I feel like, you know, like Aboriginal women kind of are the in terms of like history, and they've always been at the back. They don't have, we've always been censored. Our voices have always been, you know,
neutralized
yeah. and everything like that. And it's like, no, let's tell these stories of these strong black women that overcame so much, that, you know, that gave us so much strength. Let their voice be heard now. And I'm just, you know, I really feel that it's time to hear those stories that haven't been told, that the history books don't, you know, honour.
Hmm.
Just on that, actually, I really had the honour of speaking on Sunday night at an event that Candy Bowers organised called Decolonising Stories, and that was at the Arts Centre, and it was with a bunch of First Nations people from Australia, South Africa, and
Palestine,
yeah. And it was a really great night, and like big thanks to Candy for organising that, and the people like her are doing really badass work getting inside major arts institutions and campaigning and fighting for space for people to come and tell stories, and really, really, really kind of breaking open the form of like what it means to do theatre. Like, it's not, you know, there wasn't a night of entertainment. It was a night of storytelling, and people were asked to listen really deeply. And I think that's what First Nations storytelling style can really do for the stage. It's not, you know, it may be entertaining, but it's not, you know, a story that you can kind of lend your ear to for a while can really transform your understanding in a slow and a subtle way, in a way that you don't get if you're going to see, you know, an entertaining piece of theatre. And I think that's really important, and I'm really thankful for people carving out and holding down those spaces in big institutions. So, yeah, that's sort of my views on storytelling at the moment. I think it's really powerful.
Yeah, I think even another layer of, like, storytelling coming from a producer's perspective is then... being an artist and then cherishing their story and their story of telling a story in an institution. And I think that's where, as a producer and quite new to, I guess, that pathway as well, where I felt like a lot of pressure to make someone else's story expressible in a space where it's been refined and defined for so long. And I think, like, with my experience with Deadly Fringe, is that having a sense of responsibility over someone else's story is really hard, and you want to carry it and deal with it so gently and personally as well. But there are so many robotic things about life that make this experience, like, you know, we might have emailed each other 20 times before we've actually sit down and had a yarn about it. Mm-hmm. And it is that notion of, like, actually implementing storytelling and our ways of listening and yarning with each other in workspaces and in big institutions as well. And I think Fringe as itself, it's also an institution, and it is also like a quite Western mainstream body. But to be able to then break down the walls and decolonize a space and say, actually, let's stop emailing, come in for a yarn, I'll shout you coffee, and we'll have all the time today to do it. And I feel like that's something that I keep really bouncing back to when I am dealing with other people's stories and trying to make them possible in a space where it's hard, is always going back to your roots. And Suri talks about that a lot, about going back to your roots as artists and also as producers and radio hosts and whatnot, is just actually just putting the phone down and communicating And that's what storytelling is. It's communicating such in such that depth. But then you've got the theatrical performance and then the lighting and then the this and this, and then it's just like a total bliss and everyone should go see the show. And like, it is like that, yeah.
It's crazy. Just on that same sort of, I guess, context in regards to what you're speaking of, the idea of us speaking and communicating is obviously a natural part of our process. But when it comes back to the oral understanding, traditional way, we were always telling stories. We never read books. We never had pen, you know. The idea of telling stories and it naturally evolving through, I guess, our dreaming. Mm-hmm. And that story is from the stars, you know. And looking at this idea of, I guess, as an artist, because I know particularly in myself, like I try to sometimes step out of that box too and go, why do I always have to keep feeling like I have to tell Aboriginal stories? Why can't I talk about cheese, you know?
Yeah.
And as soon as I speak of something, I go, I can write about cheese, and then somehow it becomes, you know, like Aboriginal cheese. Somehow. it's embedded in us. That's what it's boiled down to. And it's even about, even when we try to, I guess, step out of that, you know, that way of thinking we can only do, you know, we try to be as versatile as possible, I guess, mm-hmm. but it boils down to really, this is a part of what's embedded in us, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I find it really interesting. And it's really nice to hear the process as well. This is my I guess, one of my things in regards to any artist. Can you tell me a little bit more about yourselves, Declan and Sandy, specifically about your process and how you work? And just give us a couple of, I guess, a short little idea about what makes you and what makes your work.
I try to write every day, and I usually spend the first couple of hours of the day doing timed writing exercises. So since April, I've been writing volumes and volumes and volumes of usually early it's conceptual material. So I'll write, okay, what is this about? What do I want to write about? And then I'll focus on the ideas and maybe the politics and maybe some of the narrative. And then slowly out of there, at some stage, maybe characters or voices or little insights sort of start to emerge. So I write and I do this all by hand. So I do all my first drafting of the early, and especially the early conceptual work by hand. And then at some stage, I start to get kind of a spine of the work, or I might get a central character, or I might get a really central idea that I want to interrogate. And again, I'll just go through that writing from the day before. I won't usually read a lot of it, but I'll go through maybe and I'll highlight five or six really core lines, and then I'll do my next set of writing practice from that, and I'll just start from that, and I'll go write an hour, pen on the page. So when I do a timed writing exercise, I'm not allowed to stop writing for the 60 minutes. So I'll go, cool, that's a really good four lines there, take that at the top of the page and then write on that for an hour. So this is a way that I can, over a few months, have a really stretched out process and then go back through and type and go through and highlight or pick out the core stuff and then type that up. So this is the way that I, and so in doing that and doing it very close to when I wake up in the morning, so I'm really close to that unconscious dreaming state, that allows me to be, I think, hopefully the idea is that I connect more with the unconscious and the way the unconscious speaks to me through images and through through key phrases, but especially through images, you know, the unconscious and the psyche, and I suppose my dreaming speaks to me more through images. Whereas if I'm sitting down with, if I sit down and go, oh, in this scene I want to show this, then I find that the writing can become quite contrived. That line, what do they say? Oh, and then they say that line. So I try to keep it really fluid and push it through.
In terms of my process, this is like my debut kind of writing. I'm not a writer. So it was many hours of just like laying in bed with mum going, hey, mum, what happened when you were in the orphanage, or what happened here, or what that, over cups of tea. It's very kind of organic storytelling. Mm. And, you know, her opening her heart and sharing, and then, being with family and just, you know, asking questions and with my aunties and then writing it down. So, yeah, it's kind of been, you know, over about a year I've just been yarning and writing and then kind of just, just flesh it out and create characters, and now I'm here, so it's all new.
Well, it's been an honour having you both in the studio, and of course Gal, who's always generally with Urban Dreamy, but she's so busy producing as well. It's just great to see. And the idea of you guys moving and going in the right direction and following your Leon, your instinctual knowledge, is just, it's beautiful to see in each and every one of you. Thank you so much, people, for joining us, and thanks for listening and tuning in once again to Urban Dreaming, guys. It's just been an honour always to have you in the studio with us as well. And, stay tuned for the next show. Triple Bypass will be coming up. And feel free, again, to check out the podcast for us, Urban Dreaming. You can do that on joy.org.au/urban-dreaming/. Take care, guys.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
You have been listening to Urban Dreaming with your hosts, Sue Rummy and Miss Elanius, a show that aims to bridge the gap and close the divide. You can stay up to date by adding us on your Facebook and download the podcast from joy.org.au. Urban Dreaming on Joy
Service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.